speaking to us on impact of phosphorus deficiency on potato gas exchange at ambient and elevated CO2. Thank you,
Jeff. So this is a talk I did with my my colleagues over here with USDA ARS facilities in Beltsville, Maryland. And last year I spoke about some of the results from the study, but focused more on the morphological components. And what I want to focus on now is more on the gas exchange responses. And this is more of a unique set of information. So as a brief overview, most of the studies with elevated carbon dioxide and nutrition for major agronomic crops have focused on nitrogen. And clearly, though, there's still an importance of looking at interactions with other nutrients like phosphorus. And in areas like Maryland, where you have a lot of runoff of phosphorus from agricultural practices into the bodies of water like Chesapeake Bay, it's a pretty big issue to develop information on how we can manage phosphorus in response to climate change. And like other nutrients, most of the requirements for different fertilizers for different crops come from field trials that they're usually site-specific. And so what I was interested in doing is looking at, again, the impact of projected climate change factors, but doing this in a more non-specific way. And by training, I'm a plant modeler, and we've been developing in Beltsville a model for potato. And so really what I'm after is developing a set of quantitative data that I can use to help improve the modeling tool so we can look at climate change adaptation approaches. And as I mentioned, the what I'm going to talk about today is mostly information from the leaf and canopy level response. And that gives us some physiological insight, plus sort of a long-term growth and developmental response to those factors. So the data comes from 2 7-week experiments that were conducted at our facilities. And just for reference, I refer to the experiments as E1 and E2. And these were done in SPAR chambers. SPAR is short for soil plant atmosphere research chambers. And this is a picture of one of them. And you can kind of see this is a sealed plexiglass box that's transparent to the soil radiation, and basically it's sealed so we can monitor CO2 and water fluxes throughout the whole entire growth season. Within each experiment, I used 6 chambers. 3 of the chambers were divided at either 400 part per million, which is roughly the ambient in Beltsville, and then it doubled that. And then within each 3 chambers, they were assigned to 1 of 3 different phosphorus levels, so a low level, a middle level, and a high level. And this was achieved using a triple superphosphate amendment to pots, and these were 4-gallon pots. 12 per chamber in each. This is a sand vermiculite mix. And then additional nutrients were added through a fertigation system, which was equivalent to a full-strength Hoagland's. So the measurements I'm going to focus on today are a little bit of the dry weights, but mostly, again, on this gas exchange information. And then just to note, one of the differences between these two studies was that we dropped the M level of phosphorus. We basically halved it for the second study. And then also, I increased the volume of fertigation through the second study, and it essentially had an effect of doubling the nitrogen application, and you'll see that had some consequences in this study. So moving on into some of the results, and I just show really just tuber. This is tuber and total mass from the final harvest for each study. So this graph here, the top one is from E1, the bottom is from E2, and on the y-axis is the dry matter of the plant, grams of dry matter per plant, and then this is plotted versus the grams of phosphate fertilizer added to the pot. And you can see the total is the circle, and the square is the tuber mass. And then in most of these slides, the open symbol is the elevated CO2 response. So just some summaries from this. So the phosphorus response, you can see this was nonlinear, and this is what we expect. In general, the significance was between the lowest level and then the medium level. In both studies, there was not a difference in total mass between the middle and high levels of phosphorus addition. One note, between these two slides, the scaling is the same, and you can see there's a lot more growth in the second study, and this is largely due to the increase in nitrogen that we added in that experiment. This carbon dioxide response was significant over all levels of phosphorus, and predominantly what this was an increase in tuber mass, which I've observed for other studies with potato, that you generally have an increase in tuber production positive in response to CO2 and not usually on the vegetative side. And sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words, and you can really kind of see it in this example. So this is just looking at the canopy production. This is towards the end of that second experiment. This happens to be an ambient CO2, but the same pattern would show up for the elevated. And you have low, middle, and high levels of phosphorus. You can clearly see the big difference in the leaf area production. So just bear that in mind when we start talking about some of the canopy results. And now having said that about the canopy, I'm going to go back and talk about the leaf level results and hopefully not confuse you too much. So this was point level measurements we made with the 6400. These are a maximum photosynthetic rates at saturating irradiance levels, and this is plotted versus days after emergence. So these top two graphs are from E1, the bottom two are from E2. And then again, the open symbols are elevated, declosed, or ambient. And for clarity, I just show the high and low levels of phosphorus. And so what you're seeing basically is a really big drop-off between the high level and the low level of phosphorus as far as the maximum photosynthetic rate. And the same patterns were observed between the two different CO2 levels. So to kind of summarize this, essentially if you average this across the CO2 levels in both studies, you basically have a 46 to 48% drop-off between high and low phosphorus levels. CO2 effect was not consistent, did not have a consistent enhancement effect on leaf level photosynthetic rate in either study. Now, one caveat with that is that the measurements were taken in the 6400 at 1,000 part per million, and I'll talk about that in the discussion why that might be significant. I also take a series of ACI response curves in the second experiment, and this was done at different measurement dates, also at different phosphorus levels and different CO2 levels. And so this is an example from one of those dates. This is the high level phosphorus and the low level phosphorus. And what I did is to parameterize the Farquhar and then later modified by Sharkey, this biochemical model for C3 leaves. And so these are different parameters that describe the different rate-limiting steps in their equation. And the thing to take out of this is that each of these boxes is basically a different measurement date. That each measurement date, there was pretty consistent patterns that you had a really large drop-off in these parameters in response to phosphorus in the high and low levels. And there really was not a significant effect, again, of CO2 on those parameters. And so that was consistent with what we saw with the saturation levels from the previous slide. Okay, I'm going to move now into the canopy level information. And again, this is obtained from those sealed chambers. We're basically monitoring the CO2 injection at 5-minute intervals. And so what I'm showing here, to clarify things a little bit, is I took examples of gross photosynthetic rate in the canopy that was over 1,300 micromoles, and then plot that versus the day after emergence. And so these top two graphs, again, this is E1 and E2, and then each curve is a different phosphorus treatment. So the triangles are the high, the squares are the middle, and then the low is on the bottom here. And you can see, again, this is ambient elevated. And immediately, one of the things you start to see is that there are differences now from what we saw at the leaf level to the canopy scale level. Looking just at the phosphorus, clearly in the first study, there was no difference between the H and M levels, but these are much larger assimilation rates compared to the low level. And this was, you saw the slide with looking at the differences in the canopy structure. In the second study, you did have a difference now between all three levels of phosphorus, and this was largely because we dropped that middle level of phosphorus from 2 grams to 1 gram, and you can see the response here in these three levels. But the interesting thing, and now we really start to deviate from the leaf level stuff, is that you see a CO2 effect was significant, that you had higher assimilation rates at most levels of phosphorus towards throughout most of these dates of the experiment. And so this kind of hammers home the point that you have to be really careful when you scale up leaf level responses to the whole plant. looking at some of the transpiration data, and this is more as an illustrative example of what some of the information looks like. And what I did is to pick a representative sunny day for both experiments where we had really clean data. And so, again, you're seeing the first experiment and the second experiment. And each line, again, is either the high, middle, or low levels of phosphorus, and then ambient versus elevated CO2. And for this particular day, again, similar at least for the ambient level, what we saw with the assimilation rates is that you had a clear separation between the high and middle levels of phosphorus and then the low level. But now we start to see there's some interaction effects with CO2 that make this a little bit more complicated to analyze. And then, in fact, too, you see differences between these two studies. And in this particular day, the CO2 effect was significant, that there was definitely less water use at the middle level of phosphorus in both of these studies. But what was interesting is, and I didn't show it here, but when you look at water use efficiency, where you take the assimilation rate, micromoles of CO2 per meter squared, and the vapor ratio of that and transpiration, water use efficiency is much greater for most levels of phosphorus throughout each day of the study for elevated versus ambient CO2 at most levels of phosphorus. And that's a pretty interesting result from this, and it's actually what we would have expected, knowing that for C3 plants, elevated CO2 tend to close the stomates. So some discussion points. So just to kind of summarize a little bit, too, the dry matter response, what we saw is, going on to this bullet here, that at a given CO2 level, the phosphorus responses were the same. And that indicates there's not really much of an interaction effect between phosphorus and CO2. And from a modeling standpoint, that makes it a little bit easier to model that. CO2, largely the effect was just to increase the tuber mass, which then showed up in the larger total mass. This first point here was just to kind of indicate, if you scaled up the grams of phosphorus per pot on an area basis and scaled to a kilogram per hectare, what you find from a comparison of literature in the field is that the same roughly basis at the M level of phosphorus, about 2 grams, that was where 90% of most of the studies had, or that was where most of the studies had 90% of their yield was achieved. So we did see a pretty similar response from field to field to chamber. So I thought that was an interesting note. Again, with the leaf level stuff, we saw AMAX and the parameters for the ACI curves really dropped off with low levels of phosphorus. And this was consistent with other reports in the literature with phosphorus-deficient crops. No one's done this for a potato before, as far as I could tell. So this is clearly a consistent response to what else we've seen. I mentioned earlier that when we did the leaf level response, the single measurements, this was at 1,000 part per million. But bear in mind the growth CO2s were either at 400 or 800. So the question is, well, was there a short-term enhancement effect for plants being grown into 400 part per million? And in some literature, it's mixed on this. Some people have reported that there is a positive effect of CO2 in leaf level photosynthesis. Some folks have not found any, and some have shown evidence of photosynthetic acclimation. So it's hard to say from the conclusions in our study. However, the ACI curves, there wasn't a CO2 effect either when we did the parameterization. So it's possible we didn't have an effect at the leaf level as well. Canopy gas exchange, and I think the take-home point from this is you have to be careful when you scale from leaf to canopy. And when you look at the canopy gas exchange, you're looking at the individual leaf responses, but also the long-term effects of your environmental factors on the vegetative growth in the canopy, the light relationships, the nutrient and carbon status of the plant. All these things factor into how the whole plant is responding to your factors. And so it's kind of really advantage of having these kind of chambers where you can look at some of these effects. And for modeling, it's a really beneficial way of checking how the model is doing. One thing I kind of didn't mention, but you know, those increases in assimilation rate that we showed with elevated CO2, that was consistent with what we saw in the dry matter. So you had an increase in overall total production because of the increase in tuber mass. And you saw that increase in photosynthetic rate with the higher CO2 levels, which you didn't see at the leaf level. Leaf area, which I didn't show in this study, this was actually similar for a given phosphorus level at both CO2 levels. So that does indicate that you have a higher assimilation rate in the elevated CO2 chambers. And then finally, with the ET information, in general, as we expected, you see a much different pattern in water usage as your phosphorus level drops. And your water use efficiency declines with the elevated versus ambient CO2 at a given level of phosphorus. And so these are just some summary points that there was this apparent enhancement effect of CO2 on dry matter production, the assimilation rate, and water use, which actually a negative drop in water use for a given level of phosphorus. This is a lack of interaction between phosphorus and CO2. Which suggests that the relative influence of CO2 is consistent regardless of where the level of phosphorus that was fertilized. And as we expect, of course, the nutrient deficiency, the soil level nutrient deficiency, is much greater on gas exchange than the CO2 enhancement effect would be. And then finally, the issue of scaling from leaf to canopy is a pretty big deal. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions if we have time.
Thank you very much, Dave. And we do have time for a couple of questions.
I have one query. So in your particular tree level, so I don't know whether it's due to the light by taking photograph or not. The middle one is more light and the other two are more green, dark green. So my question is, if it is not due to light, so is it phosphorus also has effect on producing more nitrogen?
Yes, actually, that's a good point. Yeah, the previous study on this, I looked at tissue composition, and it actually was just accepted in the Journal of Plant Nutrition. We did find, especially in that second study, that there's definitely an interaction effect with nitrogen and phosphorus, and especially in an indeterminate crop like potato that really affects the canopy developmental patterns, and that clearly had an effect on light interception. I didn't see a big difference in leaf level phosphorus response comparing to different CO2 levels. I didn't see a difference in CO2 effect on phosphorus content, but obviously it does have an effect on nitrogen.
Another question?
Can you correct that showing the three different ideas of phosphorus?
Yes. Oh, the big thing, is this the photosynthesis graph? Or the, I guess it doesn't really matter if it's ET or the... Yeah, the big difference was because in the first study that I saw that there really wasn't a difference going from the 2 gram, the middle level was 2 grams of triple superphosphate, and the high level of phosphorus was 8 grams. And from that first study, since I didn't see a treatment difference, what I decided to do in the second study was have that. And so essentially, we had a little bit less leaf area production in that second study. That apparently it looks like that 2 gram was kind of the cutoff above which you really didn't have much of an increase in response, but the 1 gram was not at a fully sufficient rate, I suppose, for the plant. So there was a little bit of phosphorus deficiency, and so that's why you see that. You know, and you can really see it both in the leaf area picture that I showed, but also in the separation here between the three levels. So that was because we reduced the phosphorus amount.
Okay, if there are no further questions, first I want to thank the speakers.